with our very next guest, Michael Warschauer. Our Hollywood guru joins us right now. Michael, as always, we appreciate the time. And Oscar snubs are sometimes fun to discuss. Adam Sandler kind of took his in stride, and he made a reference to his movie The Waterboy from the late 90s, which I thought was hilarious, giving a nod to Kathy Bates, who of course played his mom in that movie. Your initial thoughts on the Oscar nominations?
Well, I think it was a pretty interesting morning as far as Hollywood is concerned when these nominations came out. I think that there were not a lot of surprises when it came to some of the big winners of the morning, Joker taking and The Irishman taking those top spots of nominees. Both of them have been kind of juggernauts this award season, so it's not too surprising to see them. I think they kind of come in alongside Parasite and Once Upon a Time in Hollywood as the four big movies, along with 1917, that at this point will really be duking it out, I think, for some of these major awards. But man, the snubs this year are just sort of like every year. They kind of have taken away all of the you know, energy from these nominations. I think the biggest one that you mentioned is probably Adam Sandler. I think that was a huge shock that he and Uncut Gems were both completely left out of all of the nominations. But I did, like you said, enjoy his tweet saying it's okay and that he's going to be rooting for Kathy Bates. But a couple other major snubs. Jennifer Lopez not getting nominated for Hustlers was a major surprise. She had been a presumptive nominee for months, and so that was a big shock. I think on a smaller scale, Lupita Nyong'o had a lot of buzz for her kind of dual role in Us, but that is a movie, sometimes the Oscars just don't look very fondly on horror movies, so I think that really suffered from that. And then Eddie Murphy, of course, is the other big question mark. He's so good in Dolomite Is My Name and had really had a lot of buzz around it. I think a few weeks ago I said that it would be shocking if one of Sandler or Murphy didn't get nominated. Both of them ended up not getting there. So I was a little surprised about those nominations. I think the other really big major thing to talk about is that the Academy went with an all-male directing slate again in the Best Director category. I think that you could really argue for a lot of these guys to be in there, but it's a big snub to some really phenomenal female directors this past year. Greta Gerwig for Little Women, Lawrence Gafaria for Hustlers, Marielle Heller for A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood, Lulu Wang for The Farewell. All of those are just beautifully directed films that have a very unique vision and storytelling style to them that I think you could have very, very easily made a case to get one of them in that category. And I think it says a lot about the Oscars and kind of their strive for diversity that they haven't been able to hit these past few years, that didn't happen. But other than that, I really think that this is probably going to come down to, you know, a pretty slim vote on these movies. We've seen a lot of them splitting awards over the season, and I'm very curious to see how things all come and shake out here when the ceremony actually gets down to business.
Now, it seems like every year somebody's going to have some sort of a gripe about being snubbed in some form or fashion, and the reality is, you know, they certainly have to make some tough decisions to see who is and who is not going to make the cut. You feel like this year was any different? Do you feel like they had some more difficult decisions to make this year? Because there are some years, too, where it seems like everything's clean cut, but do you feel like this year was different?
Yeah, I think a little bit. I think that there has been, you know, so many different narratives kind of surrounding some of these major nominated films. The Joker had, you know, so much controversy leading up to it. The Irishman premiering on Netflix had its own bit of kind of a story to it. But, I think that one of the important things to remember when thinking about the Oscars and these nominations and how they're picked is that it's not really just a group of voters picking their favorite movies and performances. There's a lot of genuine campaigning that goes into this from the studios, from the nominees, from all of their people pushing them. So you have so many of these voters that are going to various award lunches and special screenings with people, and they're getting all of these promotional materials. So a lot of it depends on the campaign, and I think this year you have a couple of studios that have put a lot into their campaigns to really help not just the buzz that we all have surrounding these movies, but some very specific kind of push to the voters. So I think that you have some really strong campaigns this year. I think that there's a lot of reasons why we're kind of seeing this split, but I do think that by the time Oscar night rolls around, we should have a better idea of really what is going to happen. Frequently, the voting base kind of tips their hand as they get closer. So I suspect that things will kind of settle down here in the next coming couple weeks as we get closer to the actual ceremony.
And what we heard about the Oscar nominations, to some degree, I think, kind of overshadowed a little bit of the Critics' Choice Awards, but we're certainly not going to ignore those here. So, Michael, what were your major takeaways from the Critics' Choice Awards?
Well, I think we are starting to see clarity in our acting categories. Typically, the Golden Globes, the Critics' Choice Awards, and SAG Awards are all sort of good indicators of who we're going to see take home awards on Oscar night. And so far, we're starting to see some consistency with Joaquin Phoenix, and Renee Zellweger winning the Best Actor and Actress categories, and Laura Dern and Brad Pitt picking up the supporting actors. Those are the same as the Golden Globe winners. So I think that you can probably start putting safe money on them to pick up awards on Oscar night. I think there was some other interesting stuff in there. Bong Joon-ho and Sam Mendes tied for Best Director for Parasite and 1917, respectively, which should bring a really tight race to the Oscars. You don't see a tie very often in award season, so that was pretty cool. And then on the TV side of things, Succession and Fleabag continued their dominance of awards, but Watchmen got its first few acting awards for actress and supporting actress. And so not a ton of surprises on the TV side, but I think certainly some good goalposts and guidance signs for how the Oscars will eventually turn, at least in the acting races.
Michael Warschauer, our Hollywood guru, joining us here on Bullseye on the Afternoon. One of the movies that has certainly picked up a lot of steam in recent weeks is 1917. And on social media, I've heard a lot of great things. As a matter of fact, I haven't really heard any negatives about 1917. Why is it that this movie is getting so many positive reviews and up for so many awards?
Well, it is kind of a latecomer in award season. I think it surprised a lot of people on Golden Globes night with its wins, but it has just come out here in the States, so I think that's a big part of it. It does have a lot of great buzz. It's about two young British soldiers during World War I who are given the mission to deliver a message deep in enemy territory that will save about 1,500 people from a sneak attack by the Germans. And one of them is trying to get a message to his brother. So it has this very compelling story, but then it's filmed so that it appears to be in one long, consistent take. It was actually kind of done with camera tricks and editing tricks, but it looks as if it's one continuous action. So it has this really cool, I don't want to say gimmick, but kind of aspect to it that is unique. It really doesn't have much of a noteworthy cast, at least not in the starring role. Dean Charles Chapman and George McKay, but they're joined by Mark Strong, Andrew Scott, Richard Madden, Colin Firth, and Benedict Cumberbatch. And from everything I've heard, it's just like a really visually spectacular movie, one that kind of leaves you on the edge of your seat for the whole time. There's obviously a lot of suspense in it as they're trying to get this letter there. I've heard great things. I'm very excited to go see it. I think that it is kind of one of those latecomers in the awards race that we see every year kind of sneak in at the last minute. But this one is one that I think has a lot of legs and will be worth going to see.
Really interested to see it myself. Again, this weekend, for whatever reason, it really seemed like it got a lot more play on social media, and sometimes that's not a good thing, but in the case of this weekend, it definitely was. Well, speaking of this weekend, I finally went out and saw the new Star Wars movie. I liked it, not entirely sure why there were so many people so critical of it, but it also seems like there is some real serious spin-off potential without giving a whole lot away here. How soon do you think we might see some of that spin-off potential?
That's a good question. I think that it should be no surprise to anyone that Disney would want to keep their massive investment in the Star Wars franchise going. We know that we're going to get a lot more Star Wars coming. We don't necessarily know what form that will take, whether that's going to start being direct spinoffs to this last trilogy of movies and the original franchise, or if it's going to be something entirely new. What we do know is that there is a sequel that is slated for 2022, or a Star Wars film, rather, that's slated for 2022. And the rumor has been that they're going to announce what it is sometime this month. So we should get a clearer picture of where Star Wars is heading after that. We know that the president of Marvel Studios, Kevin Feige, who's overseeing all of the Avengers and all of those movies, he's reportedly involved in ushering in a new movie and helping Disney and Star Wars get a whole new trilogy going there. And we also have Rian Johnson, who did The Last Jedi, as well as this year's Knives Out, who was signed to do a trilogy of his own, a very new story with new characters set in the Star Wars universe. That was announced a few years ago, but no details have come out from that. So I think there's still a lot of mystery over what the next form of the movies will look like. But we know that that Star Wars is going to continue on in television, specifically on Disney Plus, quite a bit here in the coming years. There's going to be a season 2 of The Mandalorian coming this fall, a Rogue One prequel series, an Obi-Wan Kenobi series with Ewan McGregor. So Star Wars isn't going anywhere yet. We still just don't quite know which direction it's heading in, though.
And you kind of have to see that last one to get a better idea as to just how much potential there really is. But I feel like when we watch that, a lot of people said they gave you a lot of closure. I felt like we got a little closure, but they wanted to leave that door open just a little bit, and you could certainly see why, because, well, there's some money to be made there on that front for sure. All right, well, lots of good titles in 2020 on the big screen for sure. What kinds of things have you heard about? Bad Boys for Life, Chapter 3 in this saga with Martin Lawrence and Will Smith, which comes out in about a week or so.
Yeah, I think I've heard some decent things. I don't think the movie has screened yet to critics, so we're still kind of waiting for reviews, but the early buzz around it is pretty positive. I'm very excited for it. After seeing the trailer, it kind of has all the classic elements of the first two Bad Boys movies, and who doesn't love seeing Will Smith and Martin Lawrence together again? That's just great on its own. But the two of them have been pretty candid that it took a really long time to get this movie made because they were seeking a perfect script. They were really unhappy with a lot of the versions being sent to them, and so they're finally getting this made. They're obviously very happy with this script, so I think that says a lot that it took so long just because they were seeking perfection. But early tracking for this movie has it doing pretty well this weekend, possibly taking the top spot in the box office. So I think it should be a pretty strong contender this weekend to win the box office, especially with the holiday weekend for Martin Luther King Day. So I think this is going to be a big one. I'm hoping it's good because I'm a fan of the original two movies, but we'll have to see once it starts screening and actually getting up on the screen.
Seems like the last couple of weeks certainly haven't been too bad at the box office. And, you know, you mentioned that with this coming out this weekend, the Bad Boys movie, the third one in this saga, it could post some pretty decent numbers. You think these numbers could be on the way up? Is that an indication of maybe the future of the box office for 2020, or is it just more of a reflection on the titles that have been at the box office so far?
I'm hoping and optimistic that it's good for box office numbers altogether. I think we talked about it where we've seen already late in 2019 kind of an increase in box office numbers. I think that studios are starting to kind of get a little bit more careful with the things that they're releasing. I mean, we're still going to see major bombs, and, you know, look no further than this past summer when we had all of these reboots and sequels that did so poorly. But I also think that there's now that so many studios are getting involved with their own streaming networks, there's more of a push to say we're going to put our biggest tent poles and things that we know are going to make a lot of money into theaters, and some of these movies and series and whatever that are disappointing can start going on our streaming platforms where, you know, they can still find an audience, but we're not as reliant on box office numbers for that. So I think that that's going to play a big role in the coming years as far as the box offices. There'll just be a lot more stronger material that's out there. But it remains to be seen. I think that this could be a pretty big year. Marvel obviously has more movies. We got plenty more coming from Disney and their competitors. But I think it certainly helped the last few months to have those big tent poles of Frozen 2, of Star Wars, of awards movies. So we'll see how this first part of 2020 goes.
All right, Michael, before we cut you loose this week, we've got to get this week's picks to click. What should we be watching this week?
Well, a couple things to stream on Netflix. On Wednesday, Grace and Frankie returns for its sixth season. And then the hit British show Sex Education, which had a delightful first season on Netflix, returns for its second season on Friday. And you can catch up now on HBO with their new mystery series, The Outsider, a Stephen King mystery with Jason Bateman. It premiered last night, I think the first two episodes. So you can go ahead and watch those now on streaming.
Great, great stuff, Michael. We appreciate the time as always, and we look forward to doing this again next week.
Sounds good. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Michael. Again, that's Michael Warshauer, our Hollywood guru, joining us here on Bullseye on the Afternoon.